Welcome to the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined in the booth here at Progressive Field by Paul Hoynes. Paul, just really quickly recapping what we just saw. It was a pretty impressive walk-off grand slam in the bottom of the ninth. Jason Kipnis coming through with his 1,000th career hit. Another one of those, you know, you got to play the whole game, got to play nine innings because the game can turn at any minute.
Yeah, it was a really good pitching matchup, Carrasco and Covey from the White Sox. And the White Sox, you know, they really played well. But, you know, when you get a young rebuilding team against, you know, kind of an older veteran team, and you could see it almost building, you know, the White Sox, what, I think they had a 1-0 lead, they had a home run in the sixth, and they're kind of pushing to hold it, and then they get to the ninth inning, and you know, a couple breaks go against them, and bang, you know, it I've seen it happen so many times. And the Indians are what, 8-0 against the White Sox here
at Progressive
Field. I think 12-3 maybe overall this season. And you know, that's what happens when the Indians have been on the other side of that a lot. Right. So when you're a young team, that's what happens to you sometimes.
Well, and for Kipnis, it's got to be a really good feeling. You know, he makes the move out to center field. He's staying in the lineup by being out there in center. And for him to come through the last couple of days to be able to, you know, hit the ball the way that he has, it's sort of like justifying his spot in the order, but he really doesn't have to do that for Terry Francona. Francona puts him in there knowing what he's going to get out of him, and the numbers have really sort of leveled out as of late. The last 18 games, he's hitting about .315, .316, and the power numbers are there. You know, if Jason Kipnis can be this Jason Kipnis in October, then things could work out.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, you hit him eighth or ninth. What's he got? 17 home runs, 72 RBIs. You know, is it batting average? Whatever it is, .230, .240. You can live with that. And the thing you look at, Joe, is when you're matching up, when you're looking ahead to the ALDS in Houston, they've got a really good number nine hitter in Tony Kemp, and now you've got an answer to that. If Kipnis keeps hot like this, and you know your bottom of the lineup suddenly is. You know, you've got Gomes down there. Now you've got Kipnis. You know, Alonso gets pushed down a little farther with Donaldson there. So, you know, this lineup is looking pretty good right now.
And, you know, for as nice and as big as the news of Jason Kipnis sort of, announcing himself and you know, kind of having the success the last couple of nights, as big as that news is, that's not even the biggest news of the day here at the park today. You know, we show up at 3 o'clock, and we talked to Terry Francona, and he hits us with Trevor Bauer getting a start on Friday night against the Red Sox. This is huge.
Yeah, definitely. This is a guy they needed back, they wanted back, and all of a sudden you get, if Bauer can come back. You know, we were watching him throw three innings of a simulated game on Tuesday, and you're thinking, well, maybe in a week or so this guy comes back, maybe pitches two innings here, and all of a sudden Friday night against, you know, the best team in baseball, he's going to go two innings. Bieber's going to come in and in relief, you know, and piggyback on him, and then he'll start again next Tuesday against Chicago, and then probably be in line to start, I think, the final regular season game of the season in Kansas City. So they said, what Francona said, We need to start him three times to really get a feel for what he can do in the postseason. If he does that, then we could maybe start him in a game. If Bauer has a little bit of a setback, they put him in the bullpen.
Does Bieber make whatever they decide to do with Bauer that much better? You know, does Bieber's sort of ability to go into the bullpen if he has to, and be the long guy to come in after, if Bauer can't get through the first couple innings in a playoff game? Or does Bieber start, and if Bauer needs to come in and give them a 2-3 solid innings in relief, is something he can do if they decide that Bauer isn't fit to start a game? You know, Bieber can be the starter then.
Yeah.
it does his emergence sort of give them flexibility with Bauer?
Yeah, I think definitely. You know, they tried to do this last year with Clevenger. Mm-hmm. They had Clevenger, Salazar, and Tomlin in a bullpen, and when they went in against the Yankees in the ALDS, and unfortunately Clevenger, you know, had been on a roll as a starter, and they took him out of there and put him in the pen. He stopped throwing strikes. You know, so I thought that kind of backfired on him last year. So hopefully, you know, Bieber, you know, I don't think he's pitched out of the pen. So this is going to be very, very interesting. So these next, you know, couple days, a couple outings that he has, two or three outings, whatever, mm-hmm. is going to be really interesting to see how he handles
Well, and here we are circling back to a conversation we had a couple weeks ago when we were playing Tampa in this opener idea that Kevin Cash came up with and has been using and used it effectively against the Indians. If, you know, you're, especially with this start on Friday for Bauer, Bieber's knowing that he's coming in at some point in these,
right.
The second, third, fourth inning, somewhere in there. So that changes things as opposed to being in the pen and not knowing when you're going to get up at a moment's notice and having to be able to work. I can picture Bieber being okay with that. It keeps him on his day as well.
Right.
And his regular rest, so
and then
it's
what
just
if he comes in and what if he throws five innings?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bauer goes two, this guy Bieber comes in, goes four, five, six innings, you know, and you save the bullpen and you know, it's just like a start as long as you can get your head around that and make sure, you know, you're coming in the third inning instead of the first inning and you know the score might be a little, you know, the score isn't 0-0.
Right. Well, I'm glad we've got this all mapped out for them and it's going to work out totally the way that we see this and Terry Francona and nothing ever goes wrong or changes.
And the Indians kind of, you know, I mean, we've talked about this before in 2016, they kind of championed this going mm-hmm. down the stretch. You know, they had it seemed like they had a bullpen day every week. Mm-hmm. If there was at least one bullpen day where they pitched like eight guys, and then they did it in the against Toronto in the ALCS when Bauer had to leave because mm-hmm. of his cut finger.
Right, and that was more, you know, pitching your best pitchers, your best relievers, bringing in your best guys, not saving them for the end of the game because the critical outs might be in the fifth, you
exactly.
know, the fourth, fifth, sixth inning. So that's why we saw Andrew Miller used in so heavily and in a way that, you know, sort of revolutionized the bullpen games and it probably led to Cash's ideas about.
I would think, you know, I'm sure those guys talk about it all
the time.
Oh yeah,
Kevin Cash and Terry Francona never talk to each other, I'm sure.
Yeah, and you know, and that's how, you know, Miller was the ALCS MVP. Mm-hmm. That's that led to that.
So we've got a walk-off here tonight. We've got Trevor Bauer going on Friday. It's been an interesting start to the final homestand of the season. Can you believe that we're already at that point?
Yeah, I mean it's crazy. I mean this, you know, no matter. I mean, this thing is winding down, and then you know if who knows if they don't advance, you know you're done by the you know first second week of October.
Couple of weeks, yeah.
Yeah. So
with the season winding down, what are your thoughts right now just on a couple of these awards and these you know we've got the MVP race. It looks like it's pretty much locked up here for Mookie Betts. I mean, I would think. That if they just play out the rest of the season and the Red Sox get to their 105 wins or whatever and Betts doesn't get injured or anything like that, I think he's got to be the favorite to win it with Trout and Ramirez in the top three, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, it sounds like it. I mean, Trout's coming on a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jose still is kind of floundering a little bit.
Yeah.
Really, it's too bad. You know, he kind of. Since the middle of August, he's been kind of searching.
And
know?
And the thing is, he could conceivably, in the last 10 days of the season, still get to 40-40, which,
oh my God,
which
his
would
numbers,
be amazing.
You still look at his numbers. They're unbelievable.
He's 38 homers, 32 steals, something like
100
that.
100 runs, 100 RBIs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, he's got a bunch of extra base hits. You know, I mean, geez, I mean, he's had him and Lindor. I mean, mm-hmm. those you stack those numbers up. I mean, just over the course of the season, I mean, it's You know, Lindor's probably been a little more consistent, right. But you know, Ramirez probably has better numbers.
And who's your you think would be the favorite for the Cy Young in the AL? I mean, we've seen Blake Snell now, really come on strong.
Saw him twice here, but, you know, against the Indians.
But across the board, the numbers are still better for Bauer, and Bauer hasn't pitched in 6 weeks.
Yeah, and Kluber too. Yeah. You know, Kluber. I mean, has a chance to win 20 games.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll be facing, the White Sox on Monday.
Right.
So, you know, he's got a chance. So I don't know. I guess, Snell's probably a favorite. I mean,
Sale,
you know, he's been kind of – his innings are down. And, you know, he hasn't pitched, you know, but still a great year. Yeah, but you would know. You've been doing the
Tracking them. I think Sale and Snell are going to be the two. I think Sale gets it, it's going to be one of those controversial votes where it's like he was amazing for the first 4 months of the season and then really hasn't done anything for 2 months. Do you still reward that? And
about the reliever from Seattle,
Diaz? I mean. He's got 50 some saves, but I don't see the voters.
I mean, he got 10 places, right? So
right, he'll get some votes. I think it's three.
Three or four. Yeah,
he might get a couple of votes, but to me, it's going to be Sale, Snell, and Verlander.
Yeah,
those should be the top three.
And Garrett Cole, right?
Garrett Cole might be top 10. But not, and as far as rookie of the year, I've got Ohtani, Andujar, and Torres with Joey Wendell from Tampa Bay.
Joey Wendell's had a nice year.
Just outside the top three.
So yeah, those would be
my picks.
Yeah, that's not a bad choice. Yeah, definitely.
Just looking ahead because we're that close to the end of the season. We're gonna be on the road next week. So.
Yeah, it's.
Let's look ahead. Let's go ahead. We put out a call for some questions. We already talked. Brett Gates sent one in on Twitter. What do you see Shane Bieber's role for the postseason? I think Bauer's going to get that third or fourth starting spot.
Yeah.
And I think Bieber's going to go to the pen and be the guy that they go, look, if things get hairy early, you're our first guy out of the pen.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think what they wanted to do with Clevinger last year, they're going to try to do with Bieber. And you know, this is a guy that throws a lot of strikes. You know, he's quick to the plate. He doesn't walk people, and but he's a rookie,
right?
So right. It's a coin flip.
But
and you get to the postseason, and you don't know. But what he's done this year. You know, he's starting, Joey, you think this guy started double A this year. Mm-hmm. He's won 10 games in the bigs?
10 games in the bigs, yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. Yeah, he's won 6 in the minors. I think he was 6-1 or maybe 6-0 in the minors. You know, that's a hell of a season.
And did you get any tweet?
Yeah, I've got a couple here. This is kind of, sabermetrics question.
Oh,
Alex Gentilis, since wins have little to do with a pitcher's actual skill, have you considered scaling back your use of that particular statistics on writing about it or writing about it differently, about the win, you know?
I mean, I think a lot of writers, a lot of younger guys who are coming in and covering teams now, They've done that for sure. I mean, you still list the wins, and you still mention them, and pretty much every game story's got to mention who wins, who got the win, who got the loss, who got the save. But you've definitely seen a de-emphasizing of that particular stat, and there are so many more statistics, and with the advent of StatCast and having every pitch tracked and velocity and all that kind of stuff just monitored. From the very beginning, you see a lot of that change coming around, but there's still people who read the stories and look for wins and losses and only think wins, losses, ERA, and strikeouts.
And you know, I'm I get the kind of the ambiguity of the wind, you know, that once a pitcher lets the ball go, it's kind of out of his control, and I know, but to me, I still think a win is a valuable measuring stick, because especially regarding starting pitchers, I think because there comes a certain point in every game where a pitcher, a starting pitcher, if he makes a pitch, he continues. If he doesn't make a pitch, he's out of the game. If he makes a pitch, his team holds on to the lead, and he can pitch deeper into the game. And I think you can't forget that quality. You know, you can't overlook that, because there's value to it. There's value if you win 20 games, that there's value to those 20 wins, no matter how random they were.
Right, and it's not going to go the other way. You're not going to win 20 games in a season and be a guy who doesn't necessarily deserve to be considered for a Cy Young Award.
Yeah,
you might win 20 games and you might not win 20. You might win 12 games and be very worthy, but if you won 20 games, there's a reason you won 20 games. Yeah. What's going to happen to you when Jacob DeGrom wins the National League Cy Young this year with a losing record, and is your head going
to
explode?
I'm still trying to get over Felix Hernandez winning the Cy Young with 11 wins. Yeah. I think he had a losing record.
Was it a losing record?
Yeah, but he only had like 11 wins. I really haven't looked at DeGrom's stats, and I know he's had a hell of an ERA. I just think it's hard for me to get my head wrapped around it.
Right.
But it could happen. And I think the fact that it's such an outlier of a season, mm-hmm. that draws more attention to
it. And the award doesn't go to necessarily the best pitcher with the most wins. It goes to the best pitcher, and there's other criteria as well. But, you can't hold it against a guy because his team can't hit the ball.
It's
ridiculous. All right. Let's see. As far as we've got one, can we convince Hoynsey to say the Tribe has no shot in the playoffs again? That's from Brian Dickey. Hoynsey won't be making any. I can tell you with certainty, Hoynsey won't be making any wagers this year.
Unless somebody, I don't want to wish anything bad. If they lose two starting pitchers between now and the end of the season, maybe. But I once was enough. Believe me.
That's a bit much. Yeah. Go ahead.
There's one here. Let's see. Is Bob Wickman a nice guy? This is from Brett Gates, I think.
Oh, God.
Bob Wickman was okay. He's the former Indians closer. He was a good guy. He was a good guy to talk to. Him and we had a little. We kind of butted heads now and then. I remember he early in the season. He had the closest. If they have one or two bad outings, their ERAs are like 20.
Right.
So I posted that once, and he did not appreciate that. The thing I remember about Wickman is, he would, of course it was the intentional balk. Mm-hmm. When he balked the guy from second to third in the Metrodome because he thought he was stealing his signs. And another one is when he didn't know when there might be a guy that they didn't have a scouting report on or that would come up to the plate. He said he'd turn around and look at the scoreboard and look at the guy's stats and try to and figure out how to pitch to him. So it was he was kind of
this was back before the age of having every stat mapped out and having meetings before.
He would just say of course he had the thing is his tip of his finger cut off,
right,
and that gave him more movement on the ball.
Couldn't throw a ball straight if he tried.
Yeah,
to.
So he was. He was a little surly sometimes.
What's the diff on Twitter sent in a question. Ask Mr. Hoynes if he's written a book on all the years he's covered the Tribe, and if not, would he consider writing? Would you, When will you consider writing the book on the 37 years that you've...
I've forgotten more than I know, you know, so I don't think I could do it. And, you know, Joe, I don't know about you, but when you get to the end of the season, we've written so much.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I want to do is write again. even think about writing. I just want to go on some, like, one of those... what do they call those?
The hyperbaric chamber.
Yeah,
like
where you Brandon can't hear anything.
Brandon Geyer has one.
And you just listen to whales, whales singing to each other underwater. Right. That's what I want
to
do.
Hoynesy wants to listen to whale songs. And yeah, that's great. You got any more in the queue there?
Let's see. From Matt Wells, what's your favorite food in Houston? And who are some of your favorite non-Cleveland baseball writers to read? You know, I don't have a favorite food. The thing I remember about Houston, we were down there a couple of years ago. I was going to a McDonald's. And they ran out of hamburgers. How can a McDonald's run out of hamburgers? Or the guy was just giving me a hard time, one or the other.
He probably saw that you were a Cleveland sports writer and decided to mess with you.
And another, but, you know, favorite baseball writers, you know, non-Cleveland, you know, Nick Cafardo in Boston and mm-hmm. Dan Shaughnessy in Boston. Ray Ratto in San Francisco, I like him. There's a bunch of them. Yeah, I try to read as much as I can.
Excellent.
But there's a bunch of really good writers out there.
Well, let's you know, like we've mentioned, moving forward to the weekend series against Boston. This is a big one not necessarily a big one. They could come in here and clinch. So there's reason. There's maybe a little motivation to try to preserve the visitors' clubhouse, maybe.
Take it easy on Willie. The clubhouse, yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I bet there's. You know, I think both teams are going to. Well, Boston, yeah, like you said, they've still got a clinch, but I think Cleveland is going to be concentrating on, you know, Bauer on Friday. You know, continued try to get those bullpen guys out there. We saw Miller back to back tonight for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
He gave up a hit, but he got out of the inning. So I think that's a big step. You know, you were talking about the continued development of the infield. You know, with Donaldson and Ramirez, how they're doing. I think that's what we're going to see. You know, just who you know. I think it's going to be. Interesting. Does Yandy Diaz make this postseason roster? How much of a shot is he going to get? You know,
yeah, we haven't really sat down and crunched the numbers on a postseason. We're going to have to get together and do that at some point. But you know,
I think there's a lot going on.
ESPN
Simber, does he make it or not?
Well, Tito was talking today about giving Simber more opportunities against lefties. What's he do in the ninth inning? He comes in and has an opportunity to let him pitch to a switch hitter and doesn't let him do that. ESPN, I think, has the Sunday night game.
Right.
And they could be in for a world of hurt if things go the wrong way. If the Indians win one of the first two games of the series, Boston clinches on Saturday, they ain't going to have anybody in the lineup on Sunday night.
Exactly. I'll tell
you, neither team will.
Adam
you got Plutko starting for the Indians. So they thought they were getting a playoff preview. They're going to be getting a Triple-A game on Sunday night.
Exactly. So that's going to be, and I think the Friday game's on ESPN too.
Oh,
maybe.
Is it?
Oh. Yeah. So they'll be there. So we have a little bit of that atmosphere.
Hey, once a year the ESPN folks come to Cleveland, and jeez. All right. Well, pretty fun night at the ballpark. It was a pretty crummy night at the ballpark for about 3 hours, and then it got exciting there at the end.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, it's interesting, Joe. What are they? Is Cross? How do you think this postseason lineup rotation is going to go? Kluber's got to start game one, right?
If he's the Kluber that we saw the other night, yeah, absolutely. I'd give him that. Now, remember, the last 2 years, he's not started game one of the playoffs for the Indians. 2016, he started game two, and 2017, he started game two of the ALDS. So, I think they give him the ball in game one and Carrasco the ball. But
what
Carrasco,
about Bauer? I mean, how does he fit?
I think they give Bauer the start in game three.
Yeah.
I think he starts game three here in Cleveland. You want Kluber pitches well in Houston.
Yeah.
He pitches really well in Houston. Carrasco pitches well on the road.
Yeah.
So you shoot your shot. You give those two guys plus, you know.
I was wondering if they could sneak Bauer in there for number two in game two. I don't know.
I don't.
But they want him to start the last game of the season, right?
Right.
So
he's either three or four.
Yeah.
He's either game three or four.
I think you probably give him.
And
as
you
much
give
time
and you give Clevinger a shot. You just got to trust and let go. And if he doesn't get through five innings, then he doesn't get through five innings. I think you got to give him the shot to do that. And then you come back with Kluber in game five on full rest, and you say, look, if we need a game five, then we need our best pitcher to be our best pitcher.
And then you got all hands on deck anyway.
Yeah, for sure.
I was wondering with Bauer, if they would slip him into the number two spot, but I don't think they've got enough time.
I think if everything goes, unless something changes, unless he goes out there and experiences a lot of pain or doesn't recover the way that they expect him to from the first outing and then like a longer start in the second outing, I think if nothing happens and that he just goes according to the plan, then he starts game three. I don't think that's what they've got it lined up to do.
I mean, these guys, Kluber and Carrasco, have been pitching every 5 days.
Yeah.
They're healthy. They're ready to go.
And they're not going to skip them or spread them out or anything like that between now and then.
And I wonder if they regret Carrasco only making one start last year against the Yankees.
For sure. You think about this. For as good as Carlos Carrasco has been in his career for the Indians and over the last 3-4 years for the Indians, he's pitched in one playoff game for this team. And he was incredibly effective in that one playoff outing. He's got one playoff appearance in his career.
Yeah.
And that needs to change. He needs to pitch.
Yeah.
Start him in game one and bring him back for game five, because if Kluber goes bad, Kluber goes real bad quick.
Yeah.
And we've seen it twice in the last 2 months. So who knows? Here I am sitting here managing the team. But that's what we do here on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We manage the team from the booth. All right. Looking forward to the last week here of the season, the stretch run. And we'll be talking to you again next week from the road. From Chicago? No, from Kansas City.
Kansas City, probably. Well, I don't know.
I'll be talking to you from Kansas City because Thursday.
Thursday.
So look for us then. We'll talk to you soon.